Solid advice there, because that there, as they say, is Chicago style blues from Lurie Bell, son of famed harmonica player Carrie Bell, for the old gospel blues tune Don't Let the Devil Ride. As if you let the devil ride, he will next be driving your car. Don't let him be your boss, because it's gonna be a loss. Amazing. It's from his 2012 album, The Devil Ain't Got No Music. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and there's some great wisdom in this song, because that's what I referred to earlier last week and weeks before about a time to come to a reckoning about this system. What are we going to do about it? What is our role in it, if there is to be a role in it? And for ourselves, what do we see as our jobs as citizens? No matter who wins the big prize, the presidency of the United States, 20 days from now, wide swaths of America will be tallying incalculable losses that will go far beyond who the 45th occupant of the White House will be. A stunning victory, as we'll be told, will be declared for one, bitter defeat for the rest, and America will have concluded the hallowed quadrennial ritual and tradition that is a benchmark of our democracy. Yeah, I know. You're hearing the derision in my voice, of course. This year, muffled discontent with the electoral process has given way to perhaps the loudest and most pointed criticisms we've seen and heard since the tumultuous 1960s. Of the system and of candidates vying for the nation's highest office. But there's little evidence that the people's feelings and views have been high on the list of priorities in this self-centered, personality-driven race. So we do what we do regularly, which is we calibrate ourselves, or we take an accounting of where we are or where we think we are in this process. Because election 2016, which after tomorrow's final debate will mercifully soon come to an end, may just be the beginning of a new chapter of political mayhem and misfortune. And we have to become a bit more clear about what we were doing. The system is shot to hell. I mean, you see it. There is, I mean, unimaginable stuff. And it is now presented as normal, as why are people so upset? They can't imagine. You have Hillary Clinton on one hand, and you have Donald Trump on the other, both sharing the view that simply by virtue of the amount of wealth they have, the amount of money they have accumulated, and the power or the influence that goes with that, that is itself a qualification. Now, as I said, nobody has ever raised a question that maybe psychologically these people are not, they shouldn't be anywhere near other people in a capacity of decision making. Maybe they're not quite wired right. Their values are completely at odds, and we don't know the half of it, completely at odds with the way we envision leaders should be conducting themselves. And the vision that they have doesn't stretch beyond their immediate family, themselves and their immediate families, and that's pretty much it. And the purpose of government is, as the Clintons have very, very aptly proven, the purpose of government is to experience unmatched power and to accumulate unmatched wealth. And that's it. That's it. All these awful things happening, and we are supposed to be, you know, like lemmings, just sit around and observe, and we wait for the orders, who to vote for and who not to vote for. And none of these things should bother us. It's just, you know, it just goes with election year, and, you know, people are being vigorous about their democratic rights and whatnot, and it's just a contest, and you need not worry beyond that. It's nothing really to be worried about, but there's a lot to be worried about. There has been a definitive turning of a corner here, and it is not just about the election. The media have proven to us in this election cycle that they are absolute tools of the power elite. They have a vested interest in maintaining that power elite because they derive great benefits also from having access to power, and their owners are very much interested in developing as much wealth as possible and influence, which is the same thing as power. Their conduct, however, in this election cycle is nothing short of just shameful. But here too, we have to be vigilant, and we have to come to a reckoning about the media outlets that we depend on for our information about our everyday lives. What's going on? What is the truth? There is no effort being made here to disguise, at least on the part of the media, there's no effort to disguise that they are fully vested in supporting the candidacies of people who, by any standard, by any test, one would find completely odious, objectionable, far beneath what we would say is acceptable in a leadership capacity of this type. So we come to this discussion because I'm going to now say something quite disturbing to many people. In many ways, we are to blame. Yes, we are to blame. Because we have failed consistently to hold these folks accountable, and more so to hold ourselves accountable in terms of what we say we want to do, what we say we want our society to be. We just talk and we don't back it up. So we have given the message, a very clear message over the years to the power elites of this country. as to just how much they can inflict upon us before we actually get our act together and say, no, we're not doing it. We're not going to go along with that program. We have been complacent. We have been very casual about these decisions. We have not been resolute. We have not been very, very assiduous and dedicated to protecting ourselves politically and our communities politically. We have not done the housekeeping necessary. We haven't done any of that, really. We go along with the same cycle. If it's an election year, it's only about when you're going to show up to vote and who you're going to show up to vote for. And then that's the end of that. Meanwhile, the system is refining itself. It's refining its methods. It's retooling. It is getting better and better at mass control, massive infliction of pain and suffering, and with impunity, because you're not doing anything. We're not doing anything except talking. And even as we talk about these things, it is not tied to a very clear path toward a solution. So we are conditioning them, we are teaching them how to treat us. And we can't run away from that fact. We have not redefined politics ourselves. We haven't done that. We are operating with their definition, and in their definition, they win, and they get to do anything they want to do. It's a renegade government. We have been subjected to renegade governments for decades now, but in recent decades, it's been just intolerable. Intolerable. The reach of government has been increased exponentially. This is not government by the people for the people. This is government against the people, despite the people, to spite the people. It's government with a kind of vengeful heart. It's government that doesn't listen. It's government that doesn't intend to listen. You can say that we are opposed to A. And they will say, okay, very nice. Everything is fine. Thank you so much for your input. And go right ahead and do A. And there's no consequence. We refuse to grow up. And growing up means we take charge of our political decisions, and we see to it through any number of means, but particularly through the electoral process, we see to it that people who do not abide by the wishes of the people, they've got to be put out of office. They've got to go. Their parties must be destroyed because they have rendered themselves not just irrelevant, but actually harmful to the aggregate good of the people. That's where we are. That's where we've been. And we continue to just delude ourselves into thinking that somehow it is other people who are responsible for the political outcomes that we want. And that's not the way it works. We have some maturing to do. We certainly have some maturing to do. We have to become extremely aggressive about this is what we said we want, and this is what we said we didn't want. But you've gone ahead and done it anyway. You and your party have got to pay for that. We've got to decide, do we really want third parties? Do we really want an alternative? Then show the evidence that you support that, that that's what you want. and the evidence would be a well-financed, independent movement, financed by the people who say that this is what they want. But we talk about, well, you know, they should do this and they should do that. All this is fine. But when you ask people what has been your investment in the liberation that you seek, you get a silent room. They just talk. So this election is not so much about the system. The system is doing exactly what it was designed to do. It is achieving exactly, precisely the goals that it sets out to achieve. It is made up of exactly the kind of people who function best in exactly that kind of environment. We talked about the sociopath and the psychopath. And that is perfectly normal in their world. They can deal with these anomalies because they're accustomed to. Their world is the world of death and sickness and craziness that they have internalized to be quite normal. You think in your regular life you would want to associate with the Clintons or Donald Trump? I mean, really, would you want to sit down and share a meal with these people? No. You may throw up right there at the table. Just the idea that you looking across the table and seeing the likes of these staring back at you. But we won't move in an assertive way to say, we reject you. This is what we have to do. Even those in the progressive world, like Bernie Sanders, when you commit an act of treachery and betrayal at the level that you just did this year, you've got to go. You should not be welcomed anywhere in any progressive community. You should be finished. You have to be outed. You have to be condemned. You see, this is how we're supposed to mature and send signals to this system that there's an awakening here, and it is accompanied by action, consistent with the desires of the aggregate desires of the people. So for our discussion today, I would like us to really take a look at how much distance is there between what we profess and what we're doing or not doing or ought to be doing. Because the system, it doesn't matter. You can predict right now what the next 4 years are going to be. There are going to be very few surprises. And you know that. Because you have been given enough information to formulate an opinion about the conduct of these people, the way they think, the things they do, their so-called standards. It's been, they've not hidden any of this. It's in your face. We are entitled not only to rule the United States, but the planet. We're also entitled to blow it up if we want to. We have come from a world where we get everything we want, when we want, how we want it. We will sell our mother's eyeballs to get ahead. That's what you're dealing with. Do we have to wait to find out what's going to happen? What they are likely to do? There's no need to wait and to see what will happen and to pray in the meantime and hope that Hillary Clinton will see the light or that Donald Trump will actually develop some kind of intellectual capacity. That's not going to happen. In his world, he doesn't need an intellect. He could hire it. He does not need to think. He only needs to know what he wants to do and what he wants to get. That's all he's required to do in his world. His whole life has been like that. It will continue that way. There's not going to be a major metamorphosis and an epiphany, and he will somehow improve as a human being. No, that's not going to happen. Hillary Clinton is absolutely committed to being exactly who she is, and that's not good, by the way. She will continue to be an inveterate liar. She will continue to con America, and she will continue to be protected. She is busy right now constructing a transference of massive wealth to her one daughter. That's the thing that just obsesses her, apart from the power to kill off people, the power to declare wars, the power to sink the country into interminable war. This is part of her nature. Why do people think that somehow politics will solve that, absolve that, make it go away? It will only get worse. So, where do we come in here as a group generally, having lots of good ideas, but the evidence isn't showing that we're backing it up, that we have the courage to consistently back up our ideas and confront the system and score a win? This is hardscrabble stuff, not for the faint of heart. And it starts, it seems to me, with coming to some kind of resolution within yourself as to where you individually are, where you are in the spectrum, what it is you see yourself as, whether as an agent of change or you're just going with the tide, going with the flow, or you see yourself incapable of creating the changes that you want for whatever reason, whether you're disheartened, whether you feel overwhelmed by the system, that you don't even know what to do except, you know, do that mechanical thing of putting one foot in front of the other every day. And you don't see that that method of dealing with your reality is going to change anytime soon. We have to be resolute. We have to come to some kind of reckoning. That's my point. We have to have that done. That's the important piece of work to be done. Wherever it is you fall on the spectrum, it's fine. But at least invest some thinking about this. Where would that put you? That's the question that I ask of you today. Let's address that. And let's not give ourselves too much room, you know, for excuses. To say, well, you know, so much is against it. Yeah, well, you know, if you look at history, you look at history, and if some people didn't summon up the bravery to be resolute about certain things, the trauma that we think we are suffering now would be so much worse. So, yes, the system demoralizes. That's part of its function. It cannot survive with an awake, well-reasoned population. It just can't. So it makes sure that you're demoralized. It makes sure that you're depressed. It makes sure that you feel this deep sense of loss. It makes sure that you see yourself as nothing compared to its awesome power. You're just this little puny piece of power over here, and they're the juggernaut. So obviously, they're doing something right, and you're not doing something right. They're clear. They have everything that they need to control masses of people here and even around the world. They've got everything. The only thing we have is resolution. Because with that and clarity, my favorite phrase, favorite word, if we have clarity about what's going on and we have the guts to back up that clarity, we can be the most potent force for change on the planet. All right. I've talked enough. That's enough of an intro. Let's get to your questions and comments at 888-874-4888. Chris from Florida, you on the air.
Beatrice, good afternoon. Good afternoon, everybody.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
I agree with about, you know, the vast majority of what you say. However, the only obstacle I see in terms of waging this war, so to speak, is that if you're going to wage a war, you need numbers. You need an army behind you. Unfortunately, this election cycle, along with others, not only this one, but this one in particular, because of the two major parties' candidates, you're really seeing how much people don't care and are afraid of anything different. Because you can sit down with people and say, Hillary's real bad, and they already hate Trump, so you don't even need to go into why you don't dislike him. But you bring up Hillary, for instance, and they're like, well, yeah, she's better than him, though. She's better than him. Everyone has this stance, or not everyone, but a lot, too many people have this stance of, well, at least she won't do this. At least this won't happen. I come from a level of understanding. I read a lot, take in a lot of information, so on and so forth. The most difficult thing I'm coming across this past year is getting people to understand how if the system continues along this line, how they will be affected in 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years. So my question, I did want to ask you a question. How do you reach people to get them to understand that something needs to be done other than simply voting or not voting? The question is, how do you convince people to become a cancer to the system? Because that's essentially what we need to become.
Well, the one thing I would suggest is that we ourselves become very clear, and we are not. For the most part, we are not very clear. We say we are, or we think we are, but we're not. Because in so many ways on a given day, we give ourselves permission to depart from these values that we say we have. We give ourselves a way out. We have a trap door.
Yeah, it's called work.
It's called work, but you know what it is also? It is called fear. Fear of your own power.
Yes.
You're afraid of your own power. Because if you have to admit that you're powerful, you'll have to kind of demonstrate that somehow. You're a powerful person. And chances are there are a lot of other people who are powerful people who are walking around with the same syndrome, that the system is so awesome in its power that it is futile to even think of taking it on. But I think it's a very important exercise. You have to kind of be really, really clear. Not in the sense of, well, I have arrived at a point of understanding that is greater and deeper than my colleague over here, but that you understand your power with respect to the problem And this how is what, can you this flex is, your power with respect to a problem?
Yes, and this is the hurdle that I routinely am coming in front of, is that I'm telling people you have the power. Like, you know, you can do these things. This can be done. This can be achieved. And for whatever reason, a lot of people are just comfortable. They have just enough that they don't want to change that in their life. It's just
difficult. That's human nature, though. The thing is, we cannot expect some miracle out there. People are where they are. And so one of the old tenets of social work, you meet the client where he or she is.
She is, yes.
Right.
So I started to mentor some children I started to mentor some kids, mainly black kids, at a school here in South Florida through my job. So I'm talking to the kids, trying to teach them some things during my, you know, 4 hours a week I spend with them. But I'm realizing it's their parents that need the teaching. So, you know, I'm even trying to reach out through that way. So like you said, and I'm in, you know, a bad neighborhood, in the hood, so to speak. You know, I know how to speak their language. I know how to reach them. I know how to conduct myself in a manner that they would understand. Even then, you're telling the powerless you have power. And unfortunately, they're not interested a lot of the time. So where do we go from here?
Well, I think still you lead by example. What you're doing, you may think nobody's paying attention.
Okay.
But people are paying attention in their own way. But they're still dealing with the harshness of life. So in a sense, to devote time to studying what you're doing, it's a luxury. They need that time to figure out how to get from Monday to Tuesday. That's what oppression is. Oppression is you don't have the luxury of you know, setting aside time to analyze your situation.
Especially when you're trying to figure out how to keep your lights on and keep food in the fridge, you know? These are everyday problems, you know? Like, you can't not eat.
That's correct. So, but people will see when you're leading by example, and it's not that you're doing it to be seen as leading by example. You're doing it because this is your consciousness. You are in tune with your consciousness that gives you the encouragement to continue doing these things because you see the need. And you assess yourself as being able to make a change, even with a small contribution of 4 hours a week. But you may be changing lives without even knowing it.
Yeah, some of these kids I do reach, and then they come up to me the next time. Oh, Mr. Chris, I asked so-and-so about this. I asked Mrs. so-and-so about this. You know, I give them little questions to even challenge their teachers. I mean, I do this with my own kids, which is why my oldest son has problems in history class, but it's okay. You know, I know I am, but it's just the rate at which people come to deal or handle with the problems is a little too slow. And I feel like Martin in that I have no martyr complex. I don't need nor want to be on TV or seen as the leader, but I'm saying we all can be leaders in our own way. And I guess just trying to get people to take that first step is the most difficult part.
That's the thing. But continue doing what you do. But you got to get to the point of resolution about where you are with regard to a system that is far more powerful than you, far more capable than you of influencing people's opinions about things. It's certainly far more, it has a greater capacity than you do to reach people.
Now,
it has all the advantages,
thing,
but still that should not stop you at all. Thanks, Chris, for your call today and getting us started.
Can I get one more question from you?
Sure.
And I'll take your answer off the air. So with this election, it's going to be one of these two individuals. With that said, do you think it'd be better if Trump were to win than Hillary, only because people will be in a state of anger and fear, at least people, minorities, so to speak?
No, I don't think it's I'm not even thinking that way. Who will win? I know that the system wins. It doesn't matter who gets the prize. We should know that we will lose. And this is how, when systems are designed to scientifically produce an outcome, this is not by chance. So it really is only a matter of, you know, esoterics in a way, between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. One is more psychotic than the other. But they are very much in agreement about who ought to control the world. They're very much in agreement about that. They're very much in agreement with the idea of as normal, that there should be very rich people, and they are therefore ordained by some divine hand to lead, because they automatically, by virtue of their wealth and their power, they automatically are better people. It's immaterial to me. I'm real clear that no matter who wins, we lose. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Claire from Philly. You're on the air, Claire. Claire, are you there? Okay, we might have lost her. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, is this Claire?
This is Clara in Philadelphia.
Clara, okay, yes, you're on the air.
I wanted to say thank you for your prologue. I really enjoyed it because you were saying so much of what I've been thinking for a long time. The importance of taking the responsibility for change. It starts with the person. I know it's hard for people, a lot of people, to accept this, but it starts with, as you say, a resolution in your heart about what you think has to happen. And I'm resolute about the fact that, in my mind, this system has to go. It's not a matter of reform or anything else. It's so rotten from its inception, and it's just coming to our total awareness now, because it's totally in our face. But it's been this way for all time, and I think we can bring it down. I say it so many times, by not cooperating, not feeding it. As I always talk about starving the beast. Now, I do all, if we could each do what we can, other people will follow. I don't think talking to people is of very much use unless they come to you and say, I see you're doing something. Could you advise me on this? That kind of thing. Because otherwise, we come off as preachy. I just want to say a few things, specific things, like only buying exactly what one needs. Preferably used things if it's not food. Growing as much as we can on our own. Doing everything for ourselves health-wise. I know that takes a while, but I never see a doctor except orthopedics. I can't do my that. I can't make my own orthopedic inserts, things like that. But the thing is, the more autonomous we become, the more free we are. You say, okay, I have to have a job. Yes, you have to work, but you don't get involved. You just do the work, almost robotic-like, and come home and take care of your family. Taking care involves teaching and setting that day-to-day example about what we are about. This, I think, is very, what I'm saying is very consistent with what I think the message I think you're promoting now. I think I'm right. Am I right in that, Yitri?
Yes, yes, but we have to work separately and we have to work together. But we have to work with a resolution of and a clarity of what it is we're doing. And we cannot for one second pretend that, you know, the system won't get us. It's after us.
We have to realize we're in a war.
It is a war. And if we don't do the basics, it will win every time.
Yes.
That's my point. We can't continue the cycle because even as this election got off the ground, the main characters all knew what the lay of the land was going to be. They knew exactly what they were going to encounter, who was going to likely vote for them, who's not, which states are going to be the swing states. They know all about that.
Of course they know,
But we do not understand the importance of being pretty scientific about our approach to, you know, our interests. We have to be scientific about it, and we have to be resolute about it. We just have to find a way to get some degree of understanding of ourselves and our own political power. That's what I'm saying. Thanks, Clara, for your call today.
My main point is just a few words. As long as we support this system, we can expect to lose. Okay, thank you.
Amen. Thank you. Marlon from Washington, D.C., you're on the air. Marlon? Okay, he's not there. And we're having a little test of our own patience today. All right. Well, let's go to Michael from New Jersey.
Oh, hi, Yitris, and hi to the PRN audience.
Thank you so much for that. How are you, Michael?
Oh, good, good. Good afternoon to everybody. I was thinking about this also, and I saw a quote by Julian Assange, just and I can't remember. I wrote it down somewhere, and I can't find it. But he said, we can only understand this kind of civilization that we have if we know what it is. And I understand what he's saying is that, you know, it's that we don't know what's actually transpiring behind the closed doors and in the servers in the basements, etc. And if this doesn't come to light, we don't really know what kind of civilization we're living in. So he's doing his job to bring to light what's actually happening, and we can't possibly hope to reform what we don't understand. And if we don't understand what's happening now, we're not going to be able to make the kinds of reforms that we want. You know, I listen to both sides of these arguments, and I can almost understand how the far right thinks, you know, because you have people like Hillary Clinton coming into power, and you know, the way this country was set up, and it was inspired by the Enlightenment that spread through Europe in the 1700s, and they took ideas from that, and they wrote the Constitution. And the Constitution was there to, because they saw that in Europe, the power was in the monarchy and the church, and then it evolved into certain governments, kings, and so they wanted to move away from this power, this concentration of power. So in the Constitution, they tried to make a system of checks and balances because they wanted to get rid of as much power as they possibly could, and whatever power there was left, all right, they didn't want it to be any kind of overwhelming power. They wanted to try to get rid of it all. But if there was some power, then at least have checks and balances to remove that power. But what we have instead is we have this reversal. I guess human nature just progresses this way, and it's this concentration of power. actually, administrations that we have, a republic like we have, they're not supposed to come sweeping into office wielding power, these politicians. They're not supposed to be wielding power. The Constitution has the authority, and not these people are supposed to administer the Constitution. They're not supposed to wield power, create world order, and all these kinds of backroom kinds of megalomaniac things that are going on. They're supposed to simply administer the Constitution, which is there to diminish and evaporate power as much as possible.
Well, so, I mean, you laid out your case, but even in the days of the early democratic organization of our society, it was so clear. The same attitudes, the same people who were or felt that they were oppressed in Britain, the same people who were opposed to the monarchy behaved exactly like monarchs when they got here and set up their own structure. I mean, so this is the nature of human beings.
Right.
The question is
human nature, right?
Right. I mean, they constructed a system, which is the Constitution. They constructed a system to reflect their collective desire to be in control, and to be in control for a long time.
Right.
There you go. So they saw to their interests. And these
right.
weren't particularly brilliant people. They were not the intellectual elite. They were people who were clear about their objectives. And they organized a system that would outlast them, and that would consistently deliver the same benefits to those behind them as they enjoyed by formulating a system of government that they imposed. By the way, we should be very clear that that system that they formulated borrowed heavily from the system that was already in play here among the First Nations. And their system of governance was quite democratic. And the people coming across were very fascinated by this and married the revulsion
about the Native Americans
against the moniker, against the monarchy, with this some ideas that they borrowed. So we see that human nature is like this.
Right.
It is about dominating,
slipping towards totalitarianism.
Well, yeah, but that belief system was the root of genocide. That belief system informed their attitudes about the value of life, other people's lives. This was not just about how do we function in this new land. No, this is how do we take over? How do we plunder? How do we rape and pillage legally? And how do we arrogate everything that is good only to ourselves? How do we wipe out these natives who aren't even human beings? Let's just wipe them out or put them under our service eternally. They construct an instrument which to this day continues to oppress the Constitution. So this is what I mean. If you resolute about trying to get a grip on where we are politically, this is a necessary part of our, this should be a necessary part of our political understanding, because we can't believe that our existence is not related to a previous experience in these United States. We have to understand these things.
So what are we saying, though, Eutrius, that there's mediated power and there's raw power, unmediated power?
There's power. It's just power. And whether it's raw or mediated, whatever, it is about power. It's appropriate use of power and the abuse of power.
and the concentration of power, which is what's been happening with, when you see the press has is now six outlets. It used to be 20, 30, 50. Now it's consolidated down to six. And if anything, this election cycle has showed us that as the last program I heard on the station was describing the press as not information distribution, it's public relations. The press has become public relations. It's a vehicle to propagandize the population here. And
but
it's
they
concentrated
are part
into
of the
so
power
few hands.
Elite. This is the point.
It's
the press
part
is
of the
indistinguishable
government,
from the power elite. They are part of it.
Exactly. So this is what journalism has devolved into. And this is why WikiLeaks, is saying this is so important, because we can't resolve or do anything for something that we don't understand what it is.
Well, let me give you an example using this very thing. I have never worked in mainstream media.
Oh, hold on. Sorry. I have
never worked in mainstream media, ever. And that was my choice. That is exactly what I wanted to do. Most of my journalistic career has been in the black press and non-mainstream press, because I understood the nature of the press. I understood the nature of the media. I don't want to be part of that. My idea from the very beginning was to help people acquire information they otherwise will not have, that would nonetheless be extremely important in their lives. That was my decision back in 1974. Okay, so that's my decision. That was my resolution back then. I don't want, how many times people have offered me jobs here, and I'm not interested. I have no interest in working for the New York Times.
Thank God.
I'm, they will not tolerate me.
Of course.
I have no interest in working for mainstream media. No interest whatsoever. And that has been my constant theme in my professional life.
And they're not going to have any interest in what you do either, because they're in the public relations business.
Well, of course. But the thing is, why I made the decision to stay in this part of the world, this realm, is because I equated and I understood the history of the black press. The history of the black press is phenomenal in the way it changed not just black America, but it changed the entire society through advocacy, through telling it as it is, through, as the saying goes, through speaking truth to power. I connected with that. I'm not saying everybody should, but I connected with that.
Right.
And I saw that as my mission, my calling. And I've stayed true to it.
Right. And this is WikiLeaks is doing, you know?
And this is what I'm saying. We should, at some point, not just with your career or anything like that, but you have to come to some kind of understanding as to where you are and who you are and where you fit in the scheme of things, if you are of a mind that you have something that you can offer that would benefit people as a whole. If you're of that mind and mindset, then this is the work you have to do. You have to commit. You have to resolve. You have to make up your mind as to where you fit and do your part. And we've fallen off the wagon here. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of the program. It goes by so fast. So I'm tempted, as you know, but we have some really good programs lined up for this week. But we have to continue talking, because this is the best kind of education ever, when people talk to other people and share their ideas. We are experiencing tumult in our lives together. And it makes sense that we reason together to find a way out, because it is inevitable we are going to come up in a confrontational way, one way or the other, with the system, and it's going to get worse. So we'll see each other tomorrow. Stay tuned. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crow. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. And don't let the devil ride.
If you let him ride, he'll wanna try to drive.